Hello, everyone, and welcome to Season 3, Episode 3 of The Dive.
Big number 3, and for big number 3, Azale, my favorite number, guess who we have here? It's Medios, my favorite pro jungler.
12.3 KDA.
12.7, and thank you. Glad to be here.
My mistake.
Now, Medios, we had some updates with you this season. You signed with Optic. Now the Optic roster is 10-man revolving everybody around. Is everyone on the bench or no one on the bench in a situation like this?
Well, I guess everyone's kind of on the bench. Yeah, it's been pretty interesting. It wasn't exactly what I was expecting coming into it, but I think it's a pretty decent system that we have going where both teams work pretty closely together, and so we're able to like learn from one another. And you know, if like something's not working out, we can try just like swapping a player or swapping multiple players and seeing like if something else works better.
Now, when people have pitched these ideas of 10-man all competitive rosters before, one of the biggest things and one of the biggest selling points is always, oh yeah, and we can do secret internal scrims where we hide our own strategies and then we surprise people on stage. And the Optic squad that you guys have fielded for the first 2 weeks actually has picked up way more wins than people thought that they were going to do. Have you been doing, you know, one-on-one strategies with the other squad, and how has it been going?
There's been a little bit of that, definitely. I think probably the biggest thing is just matchup practice. So, you know, if people want to see how a lane's going to go, it's like Alorum and Dokla can just do like 10 different 1v1s of the same matchup, trying the different sides. And so you get a pretty good feel for it. I think sometimes you can run into a trap, though. If like you only practice in-house and you try to hide stuff, because a big thing in League is like there's a lot of stuff you don't know that you don't know, right? And so if you're only practicing against one team, it's like your weaknesses won't be exposed in the way that they might on stage or against another opponent. So while there is some of that, I think typically teams don't go for too much like super secret strats, because if you haven't tested it enough and just seen how different opponents react to it and stuff, then like you probably aren't going to be confident enough to like whip it out on stage.
Yep. Just because a pick, you know, like Alorum can beat Dokla with a pick, and maybe Dokla is playing in a certain way that someone else would play differently. And as you say, sometimes you can actually learn bad tendencies by only playing against the same people, because they may have a weakness that, you know, another team doesn't, or they may have a strength that like this pick doesn't work against them, but it will work against everyone else, or vice versa.
It does sound so cool, though, right?
It does. And I think it's useful in specific instances, right? Yeah. Like, especially, I think, like as a specific counter pick, if it's not, like, your only practice and stuff like that, then, okay, we practice a specific lane counter or whatever, like, you know, kind of famously, the Licorice Hecarim versus Aatrox thing, right?
Yeah,
like, something
exactly.
like that, I
or
think, makes
Echo
a lot of...
Echo versus Victor.
Yeah,
I mean, he gets...
Exactly
he,
like that
he
one.
He gets blamed for that one, but Fnatic was just better than them, right?
Yeah,
like, yeah, but... You know, I do think it can work out.
And
but.
That's something I've kind of been missing, you know? The moment, I think the biggest one for me was Rocks Tigers, like the MF support.
Yeah.
Because it was such a big game. And they pull out this crazy one, and then that becomes such a big deal. You know, I want to see more stuff like that. You know, like in the LCK right now, you know, Griffin. Like, Lehens will play whatever he wants as support. You know, support Elise and stuff. And even if people flame him... they are good enough and they have practiced enough that, you know, they want to try these different things. I want surprise moments in my League games.
It's so hard to justify support Elise with Guardian. It's not a troll pick, though. Like, I'm pretty sure if you can win with that, you could probably win with just about anything in that.
You should be
slot.
Talking that up. You could be in a, you have another option where you can slot in, you know, get in for some support.
Two bench spots.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know about that one. Maybe, maybe not the best pick.
I mean, maybe not the Guardian Elise or whatever, but I do think part of the reason we don't always see as much like surprise picks and stuff is because people are fairly risk averse on stage. I think a lot of people, I know I've talked to you about this before, and sometimes people are very heavily affected by what the community thinks and what they say. It's like, if I play some basic meta stuff and I lose, okay. But if I play some Guardian Elise and I lose, you bet your ass you're gonna get flamed,
yeah,
right?
Like, there's actually another angle to that too, where usually when you're practicing scrims, it's like teams will pick, you know, fairly like meta picks all the time, and occasionally like you'll try out some new stuff, but other teams just won't want to practice versus you if you're constantly whipping out like troll picks, right? Like, if we're just whipping out like, you know, Elise support or just really low tier stuff, the enemy will probably start by banning it because they're like, we're not learning anything from this practice. You know, a good team is going to pick Alistar here, not Elise. Mm. And so they just get like really skewed reads. And a lot of scrims is just practicing fundamentals, right? It's like map movement, communication, vision control, that sort of stuff. So when a game gets heavily skewed because someone wants to try this like off the wall pick, it kind of like hurts everyone involved. So I think that's a pretty big part of why we don't see it more too.
Yeah, it's honestly very similar to like a principle that we use on playtest team a lot, which is like when you're trying to test for a certain thing, you kind of have to like isolate a certain test point, right? So it's like in this example, you're trying to figure out, okay, does like Maokai top work instead of Sion if Sion is banned out or whatever, right? And then to actually figure out if that is a good pick or not, everything else around it has to be fairly standard, right? Because otherwise, how the hell do you know how good the Maokai is if your support Elise is 0-15? You know, like that's not a real test, right?
That used to always happen to me on C9. And I remember it was every time I wanted to try a pick, no one on the team could take the game seriously. Like when I was like, I think Volibear, like, he seems like he does what a jungler needs to do. You know, he's like kind of tanky. He's got like some early game.
He's a bear. He's at home in the woods.
Every lane, there's like a solo kill at level three, one way or another.
This Volibear pick just isn't that good. I mean,
are you sure we should have picked Volibear there? I'm just like,
you died three times before I finished my first buff.
Well, there's actually been a lot of changes specifically to the jungle recently that teams are going to have to test out these experience changes. That have come into the game, and LCS just started with 9.2, and there's been a lot of very vocal reaction from all junglers and even non-junglers like streamers and everything about those changes. Now, jungle experience is reduced the later the game goes. As they're respawning, they're not increasing by as much. What is like your holistic take on these changes? And have you like practiced some different, theory crafting stuff with Dardoch specifically? Because you guys have two really good junglers on the same team.
Right. We definitely we'll each have some of our own picks we want to try out against each other.
Volibear.
That one's hot.
keep it on the down low. But yeah, I mean, we definitely try out stuff, and I think Dardoch is like really good. So it's pretty cool being able to scrim against him because like there's some junglers where they'll just do like really huge blunders in their pathing or like not really punish you correctly for things you do. But I think Dardoch's super good. So we've definitely been able to learn from each other in that respect.
About the experience nerfs at all. Yeah. Is jungle ruined overreaction?
Yeah. Really complaining a lot.
I definitely think that there's, you know, the vocal crowd where anytime your role gets nerfed whatsoever, they like to say it's ruined.
Yeah.
And I actually, honestly, I didn't notice the XP nerfs too much when I first started playing, but lately I've been feeling them a lot more. And it kind of feels like, you know, there's kind of this trade-off where, you know, if one guy's ganking a lot and like all your lanes are losing, you can kind of farm to, even though you're not pressuring as much, you'll stay like the same level as him. But right now it feels like you just kind of have to fight all the time because if their jungler's going around getting kills and you're farming, you'll just be behind.
Two levels sometimes.
Exactly. And it'll just make this really weird dynamic where I feel like farming just isn't worth anything. So, you know, if you're forcing kills all the time and it's working out, great, you're getting ahead. But if it's not working out, then you're like extremely behind. So it feels a lot more snowballing now.
Yeah, it definitely does to me, especially as the game goes on. If I'm doing really well and I have like 9 kills or something, then there's a tiny, tiny chance that I'm the highest level in the game. I'm probably just the same as the solo laners, or sometimes they even have a level over me. Whereas before, like if I was actually popping off, then not only would I have all this experience and gold from kills, but I was power clearing my camps so easily, and I felt like I was getting so much more from them. So I've definitely been a lot more scared of ganking solo laners, especially top laners that in solo queue all take Ignite, and they'll just turn on the jungler you.
Show up to try to gank through Renekton. He's sitting at 100
the
Fury.
Ignite Riven.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're just dead. So it feels pretty bad, honestly, like just because you kind of have to make a choice. It's like, okay, do I keep farming to not fall super behind, or do I like make this risk, go for the play where maybe I can stay on par with the rest of the game, or if it fails, then I'm super behind.
Which is why, to me, it feels like you, like, right now, so there's the two different schools of thought, right? It's kind of like people are going full on, like, early game jungler still, like, people, you know, like Lee and Zinn and maybe J4 and stuff like that, who can gank a lot and, as you say, fight for those kills and try to stay up in XP that way. And then there's kind of, like, the more, like, supportive role, like the Ivern or the Nunu or whatever. But it does feel like a lot of the kind of, like, scaling junglers are just eliminated because, you know, while the XP changes are big, they don't actually make that big of a difference in the early stages, right? Like, when we mm-hmm. looked at the numbers, it ticks, at least this is competitive stats, but it was about 20 seconds longer to get to level 6, and then it was, like, about a minute 20 or thereabouts to get to level 11, and then it gets, like, you know, significantly slower in the higher levels. So it's, like, that's where it really starts to affect you more. You still have more gold, but champions that are dependent on levels in particular are definitely hurt a lot more.
Yeah, because the way that the XP works is actually the same at level 1. So your first clear is going to be the exact same. Jungle monsters scale until level 7, and then after that, they don't scale anymore. And the maximum that they scale to now is a lot lower than it was, like, I don't know, 20% less experience, something like that. I don't know the exact numbers.
Yeah, it's significantly
real
less.
Tax all your laners. Get that XP.
I mean, that's kind of what you have to do, right? It's like you have to get kills or experience some kills, and then you push the wave with your laners. So... I don't know if it's...
Turret plates. That's what you gotta go for now. That's actually what this has, like, pushed me more in favor of. Because when turret plates first came out, I was very cautious. And I would try and, like, grab maybe one plate and get out of there. Because I felt like it was a bait to get a bad recall for my laner. And then my top laner would be crying again. Like, come back immediately so I can, you know, get my wave back. Because he stayed too long trying to take plates. But now I'm like... These plates are, like, the most valuable thing for me to do.
Plates are insane. One thing that's I find really big in games is if you can take Herald between, like, 10 minutes in the 14-minute mark.
Free money.
Herald will do true damage, so it'll always kill two plates. So what you want to do is, like, show up at a lane that has, like, 3 or 4 plates remaining. You take a couple plates and then summon the Herald because, you know, it gets additional armor and MR per plate that goes down, but the Herald hits it for true damage, so it'll always hit it for, like, 2 plates worth of damage, about 40% of its health, and then you can just get, like, an unreal amount of gold for yourself or, like, your boy. And, like,
did you know the bonus for getting first turret now is actually less than a single plate? It's 150 gold bonus for getting your first turret bonus or whatever. So it's not even that big of a deal of, like, finishing off the first turret. It's that, like you're saying, I'm mining as many plates as quickly as possible off of turrets. So I look for turrets that are level 5 or still have 5 plates on them to go try and mine the most.
I do kind of like the idea, though, that it's like more interesting to actually fight for a rift, to fight for dragons, you know, to play for plates and not just, like, have a more kind of, like, farm incentivized style. Because dragons, too, feel really good to take for me, you know, whether I'm playing, like, no matter what lane I'm playing.
A dragon's insane.
I actually want to fight for dragons because the first one especially is so much stronger. So, like, pretty much the only one I honestly don't feel super incentivized to take in the early game is maybe mountain. Like mountain. Yeah. But like
mountain's so good though.
It is, but I mean not immediate power.
Yeah.
Right? Like I'll want to grab it. But like if there's like an ocean that spawns first, if you can get that early, I just feel like I won every lane by like just taking the dragon.
Yeah, that's true.
Here's the thing too though, since not only is the buff more powerful, since it also gives 100 gold and experience. If there's any opportunity for me to sneak it, or if your bottom lane is winning, it doesn't even put you really behind like it used to. So even mountains, I'll still try and get it early if I feel like we're gonna have control for the next one that comes up too.
Yeah.
But yeah, if I see an early Cloud Drake, Ocean Drake, Infernal
one
Drake,
thing that
of
I
course.
Super weird about Mountain Drake is after they did those changes to the first dragons, like it's 16% true damage. And so the difference between trying to kill Baron with or without a mountain is at an all-time high right now. It's pretty much like if your team has Mountain Dragon, like the other team can never leave you alone with Baron. 10 seconds and you kill it. But if you don't have Mountain,
and
you never
you can do it with two people really easily now too. That's been my biggest thing. In solo queue, nobody really pays attention. So if they see like a couple of your teammates in lane somewhere, then I'm like, all right. Time to do Baron, guys. I just need one person with me, and you can go get
it. Especially if you're playing like a Nunu or something. I had a game last night where my Nunu, with just Nunu and AD carry, took it on spawn at 20 minutes, and the Nunu's at 100% HP still when it dies. Yeah. So I'm like,
I actually heard from Terry, like big on my team, that he was playing a game with Elise in, who had Warrior, Cleaver, Tabby.
Did he solo it?
He soloed it with three Mountain Dragons.
Okay, three. Okay.
I mean, it's three, but still soloing Baron's insane.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty nice.
I know. I feel like that's probably overtuned. I think Mountain probably is giving too much right now.
They're all so buff, though. Yeah. A Cloud Drake makes you so fast.
Yeah, it does.
You remember old Quintessences? Cloud Drake gives you 3% in combat move speed now, in addition to the nutty, like, out of combat move speed. Two free Quintessence runes.
Yeah, it feels definitely good.
Yeah. I feel like we were talking about this the other day. I don't know how you feel about Cloud, but I feel like overall, people still really underestimate Cloud. I hear a lot of people saying, like, well, you don't fight for Clouds. Like, that's not really worth it and whatnot, which seems funny to me.
I disagree.
I disagree, too, because especially when you think about pro play, I remember when Boots of Swiftness were like, every role was buying them there when they were like 550 gold or whatever, when they're cheaper and stuff, you know, for the amount of move speed. And it's like, people were emphasizing that so heavily because of the additional move speed that gave them, like, in combat, in fighting. And now, ever since the Cloud Dragon buff, it's giving you in combat move speed as well. It's like, this is a significant buff. It gives you out of combat move speed, and it gives you 3% in.
Yeah, well, the one thing I'll add about the boost of swiftness is there was another reason why people got it back then too, and it's because of the champions that were played. Mm-hmm. That was when Frost Queen Claim, there was like three of them game.
Yeah.
And Trundle was really meta, like, support. So if you didn't have boost of swiftness, you would just get caught out by a slow and, like, you know, you were trapped. You couldn't get away. So that was a big reason for it. But I do agree that, like, Cloud's pretty good right now.
Yeah.
I think one reason, I mean, as a jungler, like, it does so much damage. It does kills you if you try to solo it. Like, it does probably, like,
it's because the attack speed is super fast and the dragon has the on hit thing.
Yeah, it's percent current health. So you just, like, have to recall pretty much if you try soloing Cloud.
It's definitely rough.
So it feels pretty bad.
Yeah.
It's bad.
The other thing that we kind of wanted to touch on first, like, with the state of the game, or at least I wanted to see, you don't have to give away a lot, but I was very curious of, like, how in scrims have been going recently here with, like, the beginning of the season. Which would be your top one or two or even three, like, junglers that if you hear you're going in a scrim against them, you're worried? Like, who would
players
be
or champions?
Jungle players.
Oh, players?
Yeah, for the LCS teams, like, who do you think or who immediately comes to your mind is, like, even if the team isn't that good, like, just jungler?
I think the hardest jungler for me to play against, he's not LCS, but it's Blabber. Like,
oh.
I don't know why, but this guy, like, I don't know if it's just how he plays lining up with how I play, but, like, I can never, like, read this guy. Mm-hmm. He's always doing something that I don't expect that's good, right? So it's like, usually when I'm playing against junglers, there's a couple things I think about. Like, there's the prediction for me of, like, what he's doing at a given time, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, he's probably doing this, he's probably doing that. Some of the weaker junglers, they surprise me by doing bad stuff. But then they're really good junglers. They surprise you by doing good stuff.
Yeah. How do you know what I'm doing if I don't know what I'm doing?
By the way, as soon as you started talking about that, I remembered. So I played against Meteos and you were Rek'Sai at the beginning of the season. He probably remembers this because I messaged him afterwards. So he kills my mid lane. He kills my top lane. And then he also killed my bottom lane in the first, like, 5 minutes on Rek'Sai. And so, of course, my whole team, everyone is, like, flaming the shit out of me. They're like, what the fuck are you doing? You know, LCS caster, you're fucking garbage, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, it's a pro jungler.
LCS caster versus LCS player.
And he's on Rek'Sai. And I don't know what I was playing. I was playing some, like,
you were playing
Ivern.
I think you were Ivern. Ivern.
And I was like, what do you want me to do?
Yeah.
But anyways, that's me. The
thing is, that just happens sometimes. Is jungle, like, if all your lanes decide to give up a kill to their jungler, it's like, what do you want me to do? Like, now everyone's behind, dude. It's not like I'm ahead because you gave that dude first blood.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, nice, man. You soaked up 5 seconds of his time, only gave him a kill in two waves. Like, nice, man.
Yeah.
That's so good for me.
So, anyways, you were explaining about Blabber. Like, what? Why is Blabber the guy?
I don't know.
That could read you.
I don't know. He's just always doing stuff that catches me off guard. Like, I think he's really, really good.
I mean, I honestly have been surprised that we haven't seen him at all. Not that Cloud9's doing poorly. They're doing, you know, obviously pretty fine. I think they're 2-2. But, like, he was so good in summer. And I feel like everyone just forgot about Blabber during Worlds because he didn't do very well in playing and whatnot. And then they went full-time with Svenskeren. And then they got semis. So then he just got, like, deleted out of everyone's brain, it almost felt like. Because I heard no one talking about him. Some people were talking about, like, in the community, about, okay, well, maybe we'll see Golden Glue coming in. No one's even mentioning Blabber anymore. Even though he was popping off at LCS Summer. So
part of that was the fact that they were, a lot of their success was with like Zillion Kindred combo,
yep,
right?
Kindred.
And I think maybe some people felt that he wasn't as strong on other picks. Mm. Like, he's obviously a very good Kindred and he played it extremely aggressively. But I think at Worlds he was having some trouble, right? Like that aggression was
Causing some issues. Thing that came to my mind when
he
started talking
to me, at Worlds.
I think the image or the game that he left people with was that Jarvan game, which was tragic. The the last game that he got to play as a starter. He's playing Jarvan, like they don't have a very good early game. And then there's something in the mid game where he EQs into a blind bush, the blind bush in mid lane. And like the whole enemy team is there and viewers have full vision. So everyone's like, what the hell is this guy doing? He's going, jumping in on Jarvan. It's unfortunate. It was like a very risky play because they don't have vision there, but
he did make a lot of mistakes, but he was also, it was like his first split. He's obviously very young. I still think the guy has a bright future and kind of.
Oh yeah. I mean, he's an absolute monster in solo queue too.
That's
like,
cool.
He's one of those players that just will always be top challenger. And he doesn't even do it, as far as I know, in like super cheesy ways. You know, like there's some ways you can kind of like pad your rank by, you know, like abusing certain champions or cheeses or duo, that kind of thing. But I don't know. Like, I just have a lot of respect for the dude. I think he's really good.
That's cool.
Definitely.
Do you want to drop a name on the, how did he phrase it? The bad junglers that make unexpected mistakes or something like that? Or...
I don't want to.
You don't have to flame anybody. I just wondered if you wanted to drop, like, there was a funny occurrence that happened.
I don't want to put anyone on blast. I'll say, like, the person I find myself most surprised against, for better or worse, is Rush. Like, I don't think that's a surprise to anybody, though. Like, that dude's got a pretty creative play style.
That's on brand for Rush. That's on brand.
Yeah, like, I mean, I love Rush. He's good, for sure. But, I mean, like, some games I'm just like, you know, the way I explain it to someone is, like, when I'm playing against most LCS standard junglers, it'll be like, okay, you know, 90% chance he's here, like his camps are respawning, he'll be doing this kind of pathing, maybe 10% chance he's doing some random stuff. With Rush, I'm just like, I don't even feel comfortable being like, yeah, his camp's coming up, he's going to be here. It's just like,
clears topside,
he's somewhere,
spaces,
guys.
Walks back topside.
Yeah, I mean, he's good. He finds a lot of windows that like other people wouldn't find, but sometimes I'm just like, why is he here kind of thing.
Yeah, he's mechanically really good too. Let's talk a bit about NALCS. Has been a bit of a crazy split so far. There is a clear number one, TL 4-0. There's a clear number 10, 0-4 for Golden Guardians.
The two perfect records.
Yeah, a bit unlucky for Golden Guardians to be on that end of it. And then we have FlyQuest at second, and we have, what, like six teams or something you said in third, right?
Yeah,
there's bunch of teams at 2-2.
Yep.
So, you know, like TL is kind of where everyone expected, but what have been like the big surprises for you, right? As far as like standouts, maybe people doing better, a lot better than you expected, or a lot worse?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest surprise for most people is probably 100 Thieves starting at 1-3.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's expecting them to do really well because, you know, they made it to Worlds.
Two-time world champion got added.
Yeah, they added Bang, they added Huhi, and he's got synergy with Aframu. So I think there were some pretty high...
Sorry, as soon as you started talking about Huhi, I just remember last week the Ryze game, and you know, he wanted to get to the point in the game where he could go to Aframu maybe and like work with that synergy, but
his TP didn't quite
his
make
TP
it.
Didn't get him there. Oh, you got the Aatrox in mid lane.
It happens. There's some rough games, some rough plays, but. I mean, I think everyone expected them, like, in almost all the predictions, you're expecting top four for sure.
Yeah.
And it's not to say they can't get there, but definitely not the start they were expecting. Because their one win came off of, like, someday working his magic, you know, getting, like, the 3v5 Baron steal. Yeah.
It wasn't even a clean win. And their three losses, the thing that was most damning for me was not even that they were 1-3, because it's like, okay, the three teams they lost to were arguably the three best teams in the league, right? Or at least, like, teams that were predicted up there.
Yeah.
But they didn't just lose, they got blasted. Right, it wasn't like really hotly contested games where okay, they just barely got out team fought, or maybe one lane didn't go so well. It was like they were getting slammed in all three of those games. It didn't feel like they really had a chance. And then the Golden Guardians game was like the two teams with no wins, and that was like a bloodbath. And 100 Thieves was actually way ahead, and they almost threw that game with a couple bad fights. So it was like, oh God, right? You know, that, like, you can see Afremu got interviewed after that, and he seems super unhappy even after the win, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, I know some people gave him some flack for that. I can kind of understand that as a player. Yeah. Like,
no, I get it completely. I know for me, like, their mindset, right?
For me, like, my happiness or like unhappiness after a game, it's rarely from the result itself. It's more like how we played during the game. Because, like, if we have a super sloppy win, I'm not going to be that happy about it. Because a lot of the time it's just like, okay, we didn't play well, but the other team played worse, mm-hmm. right? But if, like, we play super clean, but we lose, like, you know, you're playing against a team that's just, like, really on top of it, maybe had a little better draft, they just, like, some plays just didn't go our way, mm-hmm. then I'm not that upset about it. So I feel like he's probably feeling that kind of way. Like,
yeah, he has high expectations happy for their team, obviously.
Yeah, he wasn't happy with the level of play in the game, so... He probably just, like, wasn't in a great mood.
I will say that, you know, you're referring to the three teams that they lost to. Those are the only three teams that I put above them in my preseason power rankings. So I think that's actually a good, you know, saving grace here, even though, yes, it's a really rough early week for 100 Thieves. They have time to reset. Now it's up to, you know, coaching staff. I feel like they still they have good players that they can still perform to that sort of level, and they're not necessarily behind kind of the curve that like I predict them to start out on.
Totally, this the, like, the record isn't as surprising as the way in which they lost again, right?
Yeah. Right. I also think that there's a decent amount to be said that it's only 2 weeks into the season because you know, it's very easy to look at numbers and be like, oh, that team's 4-0, like, clearly better than 2-2. And I mean, like, I will say Liquid,
twice as many wins even.
Liquid looks in a tier of their own. Like, I'm not going to take that away from them. Liquid is doing really well. But at the same time, with a lot of the other teams in the standings, you have to look at, it's like, who have they played so far, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, you, like 100 Thieves, they've played against probably the top teams. Mm-hmm. So the rest of the round robin, they're going to have probably some easier opponents.
Yeah.
And then some teams, you know, they've stolen wins off of maybe an easier schedule. So, and there's also, not to mention the meta, right? It's like very early season, people haven't totally figured out what the best champions are. There's some scrim god champions that, like, when you're playing them in scrims and you're playing super aggro and you're just getting massive lane advantages, that might not happen on stage. Maybe instead of the other team... feeling
that's like Victor to me, dude. Victor,
that's Victor for sure.
So bad, and every game it comes out, I feel like it's
a counter all right to the team that picks it.
It's the Victor, it's the Namis, it's the champions that are like very lane dominant. And in scrims, the person playing against is just like, I don't want to deal with losing lane for 30 minutes straight. I'm gonna just go for the all in.
I think that this is a super,
it's like Jace all over again,
super strong point, especially right now where laning phase is so important. Because you can get so much money out of laning phase with the way that the game is right now, that even more than ever, like, if you have the counter pick that the other team did not scrim about or scrim, you know about or anything, and their whole draft was up to this, it's a best of one game, you get hit with this champion select that's super rough, and you get slammed, you know, on stage, there's only been a couple of games, and immediately everyone's like, this team is garbage, you know, wipe them from your memory. Like, Golden Guardians are going to be 10th place back-to-back again because they started 0-4. Like, people are going to jump to those conclusions. And a lot of it, too, I guess if we use this Golden Guardians example, by the way, which is going to, like, an interesting topic as well. I don't know if you think how they're doing is going to be, you know, project to the future. But we were talking about this a bit before. I think it might have been Dash I was just talking about. And he was like, you know, this is so early in the season. Any team, like if it was a brand new team that started out 0-4 like that, we would give them, you know, some leeway and be like, oh, you know, it's the beginning of the season. There's so many factors that are going on. But because they have this history of the back-to-back 10th places in both leagues, everyone has already damned them to 10th again, and they're like the worst team. Have you scrimmed against them? What do you
think about that? We've practiced against Golden Guardians before, and I think they're definitely a team that looked better in scrims than they've been performing on stage. Like, by no means were they kind of like easy opponents or something like that. Like, it seems like all the player in the team, like, can create advantages for themselves. They work together fairly well. Like, they didn't seem as if they were on a lower tier than any other team we practiced against. So it could just be an unlucky start, but sometimes that can sort of, like, your earlier results can get in people's heads, right? Yeah. It's like, the mental side. If you're super result focused in league, then it's really easy to fall into certain like logical traps, right? It's like you start thinking in binary ways. It's like, say that, you know, I'm a jungler and it's like, I really want to play this champion and my team forced me to play another champion and then we lose on it. I'm just like, if I just played the champion I wanted to, we would have won for sure. But it doesn't really work that way, but it can, like, obviously losing feels really bad. So sometimes people can like get trapped in that kind of line of thinking and it can kind of like actually hurt you as opposed to just like trying to see things as objectively as possible.
Yeah, I mean, I think another reason that there were such high expectations was not even just like because, you know, because of their previous history of getting 10th back-to-back and blah, 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 people thought they would start better. But it's also like, look at the players who joined the team, right? Like, you know, we saw these guys joining the team like Hauncer. You know, it was basically a year removed, but he had won a number of championships. Ole joins. He's back-to-back championships as well as back-to-back Worlds. Hauncer had been at Worlds a number of times. Like, a lot of these guys have, like, very positive history kind of attached with them. So people were expecting them, you know, like, on paper, it's supposed to be a much better team. And for Golden Guardians, it is unfortunate because when you talk about, okay, strength of schedule and like some of these teams maybe, you know, picked up some wins off weaker teams and stuff, like their easy week was supposed to be week one, right? Like that where they went 0-2. And then now in their coming next three games, they're 0-4. They have to play TSM, TL, and Optic in their next three games, right? Like that could be a 0-7 start. And I think that like mentally, as you're talking about, like that was something that I was talking about with Dash as well, is just that it's like even if a team does have the ability to improve and like has the skill to be a playoff team, if you just go mental boom, if you don't have someone like managing that and really trying to like help the players through that time, I think it can be extremely difficult. And like when I was casting the last Golden Guardians game where they lost against 100 Thieves, the way in which they lost, where it was like, you know, the 5v3 at Baron for Golden Guardians, they're on the Baron and, you know, like definitely goes out of the pit and isn't hitting the Baron and Contract has to smite because he's dying to someday. He has to smite for health or he would have just been dead before the Baron died anyway. And then they lose that and they lose the game off that. Like the way in which they lost that to me was just like, I'm watching that and I'm just thinking, oh God, like season over. Like it just the worst, most like heartbreaking way to lose, you know, when you're already 0-3. And then it's like, okay, now we have to play three really hard teams in our next three games. There's one team has ever even made playoffs when they start 0-4. And they're like, reasonably could be 0-7 or 1-6.
I mean, the mental side of pro league is a very, very important side of it. Mm-hmm. And like you're saying, since they started out the week with the easier schedule 0-4 and heading into a harder schedule, it's very likely that they start out like the entire first half, first round robin, with mostly losses here. And they're on that same track. Like that can be so difficult to overcome as far as team atmosphere and trying to keep your head clear for practicing new strategies and trying to actually focus on improvement rather than dwelling on, you know, community reactions and stuff. And you're definitely one that has experienced so many ups and downs of involving the community. Like it feels like such a tight line to have to walk and balance.
It's super hard. And I think one thing that can happen too with teams is like, the trust between players, like if that gets broken at some point due to like, you know, poor results or people not seeing eye to eye, that can be very hard for a team to move forward, right? Because if you're trying to deal with like internal conflicts between the team, then you're not even functioning as like a unit at that point. Like if you're playing against a team that's all working together and cooperating well, then it can be really hard. And I feel like you can kind of see it sometimes in teams like when they slump. Like when they're just not playing together, you know, everyone starts playing a little bit more greedy. No one wants to sacrifice for the rest of their team.
Everyone picks a lane dominant champion. There's like,
you're not going to do it.
Yeah.
So
and then usually what ends up happening is those players will just like, you know, they start pushing the line because they feel like they have to take it upon themselves to make advantages.
Gotta get the solo
and then
build.
It's like, okay, you know, I don't know where their jungler is, but you know, I want to go for this wave and oops, I'm dead. And then things can just snowball completely out of control. And that's not to say that's going to happen to Golden Guardians, but it's something that I've seen happen time and time to like all kinds of different teams. But I think on the same side, you know, you're talking about the mentality of things, and because they're going into a harder schedule, sometimes you can rally, right?
Yeah,
like they
if
haven't
win one, then that's
yeah,
hype.
Exactly. And sometimes the upper teams, you know, like when I've been on like the really successful teams, when you go up against an opponent that like you just completely underestimate, you can just get really sloppy, like not prepare your draft correctly, do some troll stuff in game, and just end up losing. Yeah. And taking a win off a top team when you're struggling can be like a huge morale boost for the team and can kind of like get things up and running again. So I don't think Golden Guardians is doomed by any means, but it's a pretty rough start.
Yeah,
for sure.
But on the positive side of things, you know, FlyQuest, the team that at least I didn't have nearly as high expectations for, I think a lot of people had them near the lower end of the standings. And they've been, you know, like a really pleasant surprise, right? They're sitting at 3-1. They actually have
doubted them.
You put them at like 7th. They have the battle for first place actually this Saturday,
six.
Well, we're gonna have to check tapes on that one.
You put them 10th.
Okay. They, you know, on Saturday they're going up against Liquid, right? And that's not a match that. It's on the same day as TSM Cloud 9. And so I think everyone like on the schedule was looking, okay, TSM Cloud 9, that's going to be like the hype match that day. Yeah. The first place match is Liquid FlyQuest, right? Yeah. And I think that's really, really cool. Especially like if FlyQuest were able to take down Liquid, that makes the league, I think, feel a lot more wide open. But I've been very impressed with a lot of their players. But Pobelter has really been looking good. And it's kind of cool to see him playing more comfortably and feeling like he has more room to kind of do his own thing and create his own advantages. And he's been looking good doing it.
I think their match against Liquid is going to be a pretty indicative match of how the rest of the season is going to look, because even though they have, you know, a slightly better record than the rest of the league, it's one of those things where I feel like
they need to schedule.
It's not just like easy schedule, but it's not like they were super commanding victories and they're just outperforming everyone. I still think they're fairly close to the rest of the teams, even though like 3-1 looks so much better than 2-2, right? It's like 75% win rate versus 50. But
dude, he's just bragging
with all these
here.
Numbers.
He's
Mr.
just constantly
Mr.
bragging.
Show off.
Look, I can do math. Oh, look at me.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. But I think that Liquid's really going to test them, because even in some of their wins, like they've been having some kind of like slow early games, right? Yeah. Against Optic, JJ was giving some charity in the bot lane. Against TSM, it looked like Pobelter was kind of struggling in lane against Bjergsen, like going down quite a bit of farm.
Yeah.
And so I think that I'm not totally sold on them being like the definitive number two.
Oh, of course not. Yeah,
like they're doing well for sure, but I think that their match against Liquid is really gonna be a hard one for them. But if they can win, then I think that they make a really good case for themselves.
I like what you were talking about earlier, where like if a team takes down the team that's getting all the praise at the time, then it's such a big like energizing moment for anyone. And I'm already starting to feel like Team Liquid, since they won back-to-back splits and they signed all these superstars, right? They're being built up to be like the god team. And so whoever ends up, you know, giving them their first loss is going to be so happy. So if FlyQuest do it, you know, not only are they already well-positioned in the standings, but I feel like that is just such a huge boost for whoever can take down Liquid the first time.
Yeah, totally. And for me, it's less about me thinking they're the second best team in the league and more just thinking, I thought this team was going to be one of the bottom teams in the league.
Actually,
and so,
the bottom team you put them.
Yeah, I did put them last. But I mean, it's one of those things where it's there's like a grouping of teams that I thought was going to be around the bottom spots, right? And that was definitely one of them for me. So even just seeing this start makes me think that they could compete for a playoff spot, right? Which is already, I think, above what a lot of people had as far as expectations for them. So I think, you know, that is exciting to see. And it feels like a lot of the league is more wide open. As I mean, CLG, another team that had a much better second week, right? 6A had an interview where he said he thought they were for sure the worst team in the league in week one, and that they actually just improved a lot into week two. So it'll be interesting to see like how some of these teams, you know, carry their success forward. Cause like week two for CLG, it was a lot better, but I also felt like they kind of won off draft a fair bit in both their games. If like both the games were the Sion games, both the games were their opponent picking no engage and the game going late. Like they were down 7K against FlyQuest, and FlyQuest had no engage and never was able to close out of the game. They won late with this like stone plate Sion who had 12K HP when he pressed stone plate. Tankier
thanks to than
his,
Baron. I mean,
thanks to his W.
Yeah. And they did have scaling in their games.
They played
and,
better.
Right.
But don't get me wrong. But I did think that it wasn't just like everything's fixed. It felt like the other teams kind of trolled the drafts a bit too.
Well, I feel like getting better and like an incremental step is what you got to have for this squad.
Yeah.
Cause I don't know about you, but I heard like before LCS started or whatever, I kept on hearing all these rumors from scrims and stuff that CLG was the floor. Like they were getting just wrecked. They didn't have their strategic coach even locked down yet. Yeah. And Irene, that's his name, right?
Yeah. I'm not sure if it's Irene or Irian.
I think it's Irene. But I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think so. But anyways, he's been like they've been so positive about him mm-hmm. since they've brought him on. And he one thing he did was also like make it the more standard roster because I think they were just completely switching everyone every game before mm-hmm. and like having a hard time building up, you know, what they actually want to focus on, which kind of makes sense a lot too. So if you're starting at the bottom, if you're the floor and you finally
They agreed. He said they were hard tent first week.
You finally got all your pieces together. Now like their coaching is finally, you know, able to put together. I think like that's a super positive thing for them. And mm-hmm. talking about reactions, they were so goddamn happy after their win.
Popping off against Cloud9.
I felt like that was a party. I like wanted to go like to the CLG after party.
You start hugging them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's definitely a big surprise week two for CLG. Like, yeah. I think a lot of people were expecting them to be like near the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So whether or not it was like them turning things around, or maybe their opponents not respecting them enough,
or a bit of both, right? Like,
it can totally be both.
Like, they can improve, and their team's opponents didn't play the best games.
Yeah, and I think it's really like the hardest trap to avoid in League when you're looking at like how good a team is or certain players. It's like it's so easy to just look at their results, right? It's like, oh, you won a game, you're good. You lost a game, you're not good.
You had a 14 KDA, best jungler.
12.7.
Damn it.
Maybe it was 14 at some point.
Yeah, at some point. But that's not the meme. We got to stick to the canon meme.
And you are a good jungler. So,
speaking of that,
I like to believe
this is
so.
A tangent. Do you like the Meteos Ego Twitter? Because I find it hilarious.
I think it's really funny.
I also see how it would not be hilarious.
No, honestly, when I first saw it, I didn't like it. Like,
yeah.
When it first came about, yeah. I was like, this is just someone like making fun of me.
Yeah.
And like, I remember I think I blocked him on Twitter and stuff. Okay. And then like everyone kept saying like it was the funniest thing ever. And I think I was just like taking it too personally.
Yeah.
But eventually I just like, you know, realized it wasn't really.
It's not making
something to take
fun of you. It's making fun of like what you could be. Almost.
Yeah, exactly. And so like, since then, like I thought it was really funny. And I actually don't know who runs it, and I don't
still.
I don't want to know.
Okay.
I really don't want to know. I think it's a lot funnier to just picture me saying it.
Yeah, I think so too. That's why I think it's so funny, because I know you and you're not like that. So it's like I think it's hilarious to
I only
picture
that
you
in
being
my head.
Like that. But but if you were like that, I could definitely see it like hitting home a little too close. You know,
it's the things that he thinks, but he just won't say. Yeah,
exactly.
But I'm actually so impressed that it's still going. It's been going for so long. So it's definitely someone who is super invested in the scene.
Yeah.
Like when
they have some good memes.
When it first started, people were theorizing just all these random like comedians and stuff too. And I was like, I don't think so. And now I'm definitely sure that it's someone way more invested in mm-hmm. the scene.
It's you.
And they're really smart, you know, and good looking, yeah. And rich, you know, and the best at everything they do. So
okay, well, it's time now. We already heard the jungle story.
Well, shit.
I don't know if you guys have been playing my solo queue, but 9.3
is
coming out.
You've seen me on, bro.
That's true. You've been playing. 9.3 is coming out. New patch. There's a number of changes, you know, most notably, I would say the marksman items getting changed again, as well as kind of like a slew of different nerfs. Anything big that really is standing out from this patch for you guys?
Well, I think this was the patch where they're hard nerfing Akali and Aatrox both. And I think it's a step in the right direction, because going back a little bit to competitive, like one of the things that I think is super strange right now is just like how many super overpowered champions there are. Where it's like something like Akali, where maybe she has a 45% win rate in solo queue, but if you look at what this champion can do, like what she has access to, like granted it takes a lot of practice to get to the level where you can execute it correctly all the time, but like you just can't do anything against her if she's playing correctly. So that kind of thing's pretty lame, I think, when you're drafting, because it's like, okay, you know, like what super insanely overpowered champion do we want to play against this time? Like, which ones do we want to take? And honestly, it's been like all the new champions, right? It's like Aatrox, Akali, Urgot, all these things. So I'm happy to see some of them get nerfed, especially the ones where I think they lead to sort of like more stale game states. Because, you know, a big thing that Riot's been trying to do lately with their patches is make, like, they reduce the amount of vision, so they want, like, more jungle ganks to happen, that kind of thing. But when you're playing against, like, Urgot, Akali, Lissandra, like, you can't gank those champions. You can show up against an Urgot, him having no idea you're there, and he just walks away. He's so tanky.
Yeah.
So I definitely like seeing those champs get nerfed. I think that once they're a little bit more in line with other stuff, we'll be able to see, like, more champions come out.
Yeah, and they also added on Cassiopeia and Aurelia to that.
Exactly.
It was all of these champions that are, like, first pick, first
ban. Didn't get nerfed, though. That's the thing that makes me sad.
Yeah.
Because he's going to be 100% presence. He didn't get nerfed in this patch.
Yeah.
He got, like, that slight touch
and
on
he's
9.2.
So boring.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Urgot.
Yeah. Urgot's the worst for me because the other ones are OP, but at least they can be more interesting to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Now you got less other things you have to ban.
I'm jungling.
That's true. Yeah,
I'm jungling against Urgot, and, like, this guy does way more damage than me at all points in time. He's way tankier. He has way more play making ability.
Into fucking
yeah,
meat
it's just
so he,
like,
can fear everybody.
Where's my jungle champ that does all of this? Right? It's like
Urgot jungle.
Yeah, I don't know if I have the money for that one. I might be low level the whole game. Riot doesn't like me getting experience.
That's true.
We're worried junglers. We're having too much fun, so.
Yeah.
No more.
It seems weird to me because the things that people, and now we're just going to talk about balance changes, which are Jat's fault. So you can blame him for ruining our jungle.
He was one of us.
He was one of us. And then he went and ruined everything. But the thing to me where they're like, so you kind of touched on it where you're like, oh, Riot wants junglers to gank more. But the complaints that everyone on both teams always has the most of is getting ganked. Like, that's what makes people hate junglers. Like, all laners hate junglers because they hate getting ganked. And they get ganked by the enemy jungler. They're flaming their jungle immediately. This guy ganked me. What are you doing while you're bottom lane? Like, I just got a double kill. There's a whole map here. And you're a part of it.
Oh, yeah. It's a huge thing. And one, I think it's definitely a good point because with a lot of the way Riot changes the game, like, it's pretty clear with the way that's been going. Like, they don't want junglers influencing lanes in such an insane way, right? Mm-hmm. And so they're like, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to make it so junglers can't clear their jungle. Like, we want them to just get so low health farming that they won't have time to gank. But what actually happens is you're just like, okay, so you're saying I get low HP farming, right? Like, yep.
Scuttle.
Okay, I won't farm. Like, I will take red buff, and I'm going to gank. And you get stuff like Camille, Xin Zhao. And then previously what kept that playstyle from being so oppressive is the fact that, like, if I take red and go for a level 2 gank, and the other guy does 3 camps, he's level 3.
Yeah.
And now he's contesting me on whatever camp I go to next with a level advantage. But now it's like you either need to do Krugs to get level 3, which takes a while and is super out of the way, or you're still level 2 as well. So you don't really punish it as well. So I think a lot of the changes that have been, you know, well-intentioned haven't really hit the mark, and it's left the game in, like, a super strange state.
Yeah. For me, it always was weird because, like you're saying, the counter to this that was always a really interesting balance to jungling and why, you know, I wanted to be a jungler from the very beginning because there were so many options and there are so many different valuable things that you could do. The value in the jungle itself for farming should be decently high so that I can punish this Jarvan level 2 red buff cheese ganker for spending his time. Yes, if he gets the gank, you know, that's a, you know, well played by him and you get a reward. But if he fails it, then I get to punish him. You know, I'm pathing over here to steal stuff from him, or, you know, I'm trying to organize my route in a way that I'll gain value from seeing him and, like, using this information. And there's a tug and pull. But if you're doing things, and this is just random theory crafting, I'm not, you know, a designer or whatever, but if you're doing things like lowering all the value in the jungle, then you're lowering the possible counters that I have to that strategy, and you're also adding this scuttle crab thing into the jungle that heals people as well as being the biggest source of golden experience. So if the Jarvan went for that gank and my mid laner, like, outplayed it, he flashed, he dealt a lot of damage back to him, that guy goes and takes the scuttle crab and he's back to full health or something now. Plus he's got the golden experience, and not only does it doesn't fight back, it gives you these big rewards, it also heals you full, gives you your mana back and everything. That to me was like, okay, so they are making all these changes, like you're saying, to push people to these early ganking junglers, level two, get out there, you know, start fighting people. And they're taking away a lot of the back end, you know, theory crafting around your jungle path and all these kind of mind games.
Yeah, like I definitely agree with that for sure. One thing that's kind of weird too is I noticed that when they changed the machete and talisman to the current form, they, you know, they took away the attack speed from machete. They made it all on hit damage. And it's just kind of like, it's streamlined a lot of the paths you can take on junglers where it's like, you know, if I'm a machete champion, I kill my buffs really fast. I kill crabs really fast. I can't do raptors for the most part and Krugs will kill me. So it's like, I just think that's kind of weird constraints to put on the jungle. Whereas like if I'm playing Zac, it's going to take me 5 years to kill a red buff if I'm starting talisman. And so it just, I wish that junglers had like a more similar clear speed, I guess.
It did. The jungle items is another super interesting like point because.
You can tell there's two junglers here. We're not even talking about the patch notes.
And we're not, sorry, we're it's not a, it's involving our top laner. Just like, stay up there, dude. I'm trying to get my jungle route down. But so the other thing that they did with the talisman change, they basically removed mana constraints for junglers. Mm-hmm. So.
Scuttle is really egregious with that.
Right? Yeah.
Like, I feel like Scuttle is the biggest problem out of all this stuff, personally. Just like I play a lot of Phil.
Yeah, though. You get to interact with the Scuttle crab, so I'm gonna look.
Yeah, I mean, Scuttle, I mean, I play Phil, so I do play jungle too, but it's like, Scuttle always felt weird to me, because like, for example, I liked playing Fiddlesticks, right? And when Scuttle got introduced, I'm like, well, I probably can never play this champion again. Like, yes, you can. Yes, it can work. But I mean, just how bad that champion is at taking Scuttle, I don't know if you guys ever played Fiddlesticks, but it's... Yeah. Like, you fear it to get the resistances off, and then it's like, I'm supposed to sit here and drain life it while it runs away from me,
Medios,
and then I like, auto it for like
professional
40.
Fiddlesticks game, one of the very few professional Fiddlesticks.
Yeah. I won a game this Fiddlesticks, even more rare.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, things like that felt weird to me, where there was like certain champions that I liked playing in jungle that I used to like playing Kayle jungle, not saying it would ever have worked in pro, but it was something that I just enjoyed playing in solo queue, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, well, how the hell is Kayle ever kill this thing? I have no CC to remove the resistances from Scuttle. Yeah. So it's like, okay, Kayle's gone. Oh, Fiddle's not going to work. Okay, there's like a number of champions that I just immediately felt like, how am I ever supposed to get this thing that it's like, okay, you're playing a Xin Zhao, so you're already earlier, stronger than me. You're going to gank better than me. The way I'm supposed to get gold and mana back to keep farming is by doing the Scuttle, but I also can't kill that.
You know what? I talked to Darok about this a few weeks ago, and I was thinking like, what if the way you broke the Scuttlecrab's armor in Mar, it wasn't CCing it, but if you, the only way you can do it is smiting it. So if you want to kill Scuttle fast, you smite it early, and then you can kill it.
But you
and
can't
then
it
kind of bridges the gaps between the Graves, who can effortlessly break the armor on this Scuttle and kill it 10 times faster than champs with no CC, who have to like actually invest their long cooldown CCs just to break the armor in Mar. So... like, that's one of those constraints. I think it's a really good point to bring up because it just, to me, it doesn't make sense. It's like, why is this something that affects which jungle champions are playable? Like, it doesn't seem like it should be that big of a deal to the point where it's like, okay, I'm just totally, like, putting myself at a disadvantage and my team because I want to play my favorite champion.
Yeah, like, if you remove all these constraints, like, again, the talisman, like, example with mana, that's something that, like, yes, it makes your jungling, like, take... effort and thought into, you know how I'm going to balance. Okay, I have what abilities am I going to use? What camps can I clear? It also puts that constraint on your opponent jungler, which made the cool game of like, I just saw him, you know, with half mana or whatever, and previously like you didn't get all this back, and he's playing this champion or whatever, so I can kind of like start to build my you know, thesis on like what the enemy jungler is doing, and so then you incorporate that into your overall game plan, which is something that I really enjoyed with it. But like they just boosted the mana regen to insane levels and made it regen in the river also.
I mean, I like that.
I mean,
personally.
It does feel nice to like have all that power, right? But I kind of like having some, and maybe that's like, I'm not saying it's a bad change or you revert or anything, but some sort of constraint so that, you know, I'm planning around something and I can plan around something that the enemy is doing. Yep. Seems like that was kind of the more chess games type of feel that jungling used to have, I think.
Yeah. One thing, too, that while we're on the topic,
we should talk a bit about the marksman stuff, because that's the actual actually what's happening in the patch, and people are going to be watching the patch section and they're just like, what are these monkeys?
But I don't play
marksman. I got here with my friend has to say over here.
Why do laners kill jungle camps faster than junglers at all points in time, except for the first clear? That's something that's bothered me for a while. Like, I'm in a competitive game, and look at junglers nowadays. It's like, you get warrior because you have to play an early game jungler, and you get GA while the time everyone else has four items.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want my jungle back.
Preaching to the choir.
All right, we can move on.
All right, let's talk
hold on, my last example. When the level four Renekton comes down from top lane and wants to take Scuttle Crab, I'm like, yes, sir, that's your Scuttle Crab, sir. Like, he's got a rage bar or something. He has Ignite. So I kind of like your smite idea. But we should move along to the item changes. You want to talk about the marksman one?
Sure. I mean, all the marksman items got redone, right? That is the big change. That is what most people are going to be thinking about with this patch. The general TLDR of what they're trying to do, the three main goals they had: crit users excited about their core build again, crit builds are generally more satisfying in normal play without becoming problematic in pro, and crit users can fit defense into their core builds if they need it. Essentially, you know, the IE change is what most of the stuff is centering around. They removed the doubling of the current crit that you already have. They removed the true damage from IE. So now it gives you a 25% flat crit and increases your crit damage by 25%. So IE can be a first rush item. Stormraiser essentially got changed so that it's more supposed to be like a third or even a fourth item, where it doesn't have the guaranteed crit on it anymore. It actually... like is like a stacking thing, like a Shiv or you know, a rapid fire or whatever. And it slows people over 40%, decaying over 1 second. And it also makes all your other energized things 30% more effective. So that would be Fleet Footwork. That would be your Shiv. That would be all those. So those are pretty big. And then the other thing that really stands out to me is PD is now a shield. And this is the one that I think we may see across like jungle even and stuff as well. Like when I think of Graves. So instead of it just being the enemy that you're hitting deals 20% or 12% less damage to you, this is when you get below 30% HP, an attack that would take you below that, you get a shield that is between 240 and 600. Starts scaling at level 9, and it's shield for 2 seconds. So that seems like pretty crazy to me. I'm thinking immediately like, oh my God, Graves with Warrior PD or whatever, and champions like that.
Yeah, one thing worth noting too with the effect is it does have the keyword lifeline, which is the same one that Hex Drinker and Sterix use. So you won't actually be able to stack it with either of those. But I do think it's a pretty cool change for sure. It looks like, looking at the items, like obviously I haven't played any games on this patch yet, so I could be totally wrong. But the biggest thing that stood out to me was the Stormraiser change. I actually tweeted about it because like to me it just looks like a hard nerf across the board. Like, so I don't know what one item spike AD carries are going to look like, but
probably IE. It's probably going to be IE Rush again, maybe Essence Reaver or Bork. Those three items,
right? But I still think those are probably going to be weaker than the previous iteration of Stormraiser because going from the previous patch, most crit users would go Stormraiser and then Rapid Fire Cannon, and both of those are like pretty good spikes, even though like a lot of the time they're behind, and it feels super bad playing like, you know, Caitlyn or Tristana and getting those items when you're up against like a three item mage or something like that. But I don't know, the Stormraiser, like, it went up in cost, it went down in AD and attack speed, it lost the auto crit, which was a pretty big part of it. But I mean, I don't know how useful this energized effect is going to be on the item. Like, obviously it works with static Shiv and rapid fire, increasing your range by even more, so and
probably fleet as well, so you could get a really big heal,
definitely. But I don't know, that's the one that stuck out the most to me. It just seemed kind of weak for sure.
I mean, they even give some like some suggested build style thing. I mean, I think like, you know, most people are assuming that people are going to go back to IE Rush, but we could also be back in the days where it was like people would just go BF and then there's the heal item and then complete IE. I think that's totally reasonable as well. So but definitely Stormraiser is gonna be garbage as a first item, so you definitely do not want to get that. And I think, as you say, it's mostly going to be up to like how useful is like the added empowerment of your energized items, right? Because if you are a Fleet Footwork plus rapid fire style like marksman, you know, in my head, I'm thinking, okay, you're like a Caitlyn with four items and you have the Stormraiser as your fourth item. All of a sudden, your rapid fire headshot or whatever is going to slow them. and deal a bunch of extra damage, and if it increases the speed up of your fleet footwork and all that stuff, then maybe it becomes effective as like part of a six item build. But I definitely hear you, like the standalone item sounds garbage, right?
Yeah, the thing that I would say too is it's not, you know, does this item have any use ever, but I'm comparing it to what you could get instead, because if I'm an AD carry with you know, let's say IE rapid fire static, then the items that Storm Raider is competing with is like, do I want a Bloodthirster, a GA, a Lord Dom?
Do you need a Maw? Yeah.
So to me, I don't know. It seems worse, but
they did recently buff the lifesteal rune in precision to give a lot more lifesteal. So I can definitely see people foregoing their lifesteal item and just taking that.
Yeah.
Because it scales really well now.
But it takes a long time to stack.
It does, but like these are aimed at being more like late game AD carries. Mm-hmm. If I'm going early game and you're like talking about your cup 1-2 item power spikes, I'm going Lucian every time. Lucian Bork, like there's zero question for me there. I do like this Spear of Sojin item.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely an interesting
one. Though I'm going to be a very poor jungler nowadays with my little brown bag boots and my warrior, and then the game's probably over.
This is like a jungle pity party over here.
That was a joke. But the Spear of Sojin sounds cool because it feels like the special like aspect on it, the Awakened Dragon, yeah, is going to be the Essence Reaver just transferred over to an item that gives bruiser stats. Attack damage and health is good on like almost any AD jungler. So I feel like I do see a world where I can get this item. Like I can go warrior into Spear of Sojin, and then I have a cool interaction with my ultimate too, depending on which champion I want to like get the most out of that for. So that actually did kind of...
It is
yeah, so well, touching on Spear of Sojin, the thing that stands out to me is that it's going to be competing pretty much directly with Black Cleaver for the item slot.
Yeah, that's true.
And one thing that, if I'm a jungler trying to build Spear of Sojin, I have to be really, really rich to get this item because the components are actually a big part of what I look at when I'm building an item. And something that's super nice about Cleaver is that you can just go like... Warrior, and then every single time
grab
you
grab a health crystal.
Yeah, you can get two ruby crystals. You can get a phage and another ruby crystal. Like it has a very smooth path. Like if you're building Spear of Sojin, it's like, okay, I got my warrior. Now I'm gonna back for a BF sword.
Well, I got three kills. That's why why I'm going Spear of
Sojin.
You
can get it, but I don't know. To me, this item, I feel like it's gonna be out of reach for most junglers because you know, if you can get the Kindle Gem, right? But then what's your next 2,600 gold going
to
look like?
Back to pity party over here. Now I'm sad. My dreams are dead.
Even for top laners, I actually think that I heard initially I'd seen, you know, a number of people on like Twitter and so on and so forth kind of complaining about this new item being like, oh, they should have just taken it out. Like Jax and Riven, all these champions are going to be so OP with it. But it costs like significantly more. So old Essence Reaver was 3K, I believe, for a completion. This is 3,400. It also has 15 less AD than old Essence Reaver had. Yes, it has the CDR and the passive is very nice, but like, it costs 400 more gold. Like, that is really significant. So I do think people will buy it sometimes. But we saw, like, now there was a ton of high elo, like, Rivens and Jaxes and Renektons that were actually rushing Essence Reaver or maybe going Tiamat into Essence Reaver and things like that, because if you use that item really well, it was super OP. But, like, rushing a 3,400 gold item is, you know, pretty expensive for a lot less AD. So I'll be interested to see, like, where it does actually slot in. But... I do think that PD is the most like interesting change for me, just because this for once feels like when I'm playing Marksman, I don't have to like fully sacrifice all my damage to build a defensive item, because it felt so bad. It's like, okay, you're playing a Rengar and I'm my, you know, Caitlyn bot lane or whatever, and you're popping off, right? And it's like in the past, what was I ever supposed to build besides maybe like tabbies or something like that to not just completely ruin my damage? You know what I mean? If there's like a Sion top and a Rengar, you're like, okay, well, I don't want to get one shot, but I need my like rapid fire IE Last Whisper or whatever to have a chance of killing this guy. So I do think it's kind of interesting to be able to actually, you know, you gimp your damage a little bit, but you grab a PD and that gives you some hope of maybe not just getting one shot by a Fed assassin, by the Zed or the Talon or the Rengar or whatever. So I do think that's something we may see a lot more of. just with that shield. And that, I think, is something that a lot of marksman players will really feel good about. If it's too strong remains to be seen, because something that fits easily into your build path and just is a generic 240 shield when you first complete it sounds really strong to me.
Yeah, I actually really like that. It kind of reminds me of the same trade-off you would make from going from Ludens to Seraphs, where it still feels like pretty much what you need that slot mm-hmm. to do, but you know, you lose the range from rapid fire in exchange for a defensive shield. And it's I think Ludens to Seraphs is a really good comparison, because yeah. you can get the shield from Seraphs, but you lose the added wave clear of Ludens. So it seems like a good change to me as far as like how balanced it is, like number wise. Haven't really seen it yet, yeah, but it looks really strong. The lower price point is really nice for them too.
It's just nice though, because you couldn't ever realistically go like Maw second or something like that.
You would
or
do no
like,
damage.
Exactly, you do nothing. Or what are you gonna do? You're gonna like buy like a Asterix on Caitlyn? That's not gonna work. Okay, you're gonna go like a fucking GA second, then you're gonna do no damage, right? So this is kind of pretty nice, I think, for them. We do have some Twitter questions. Some people.
Hold on.
Nope.
The most important change of this patch.
Okay.
You haven't talked about the gold bounty change here.
That's the most important change, not all the marksman stuff?
Yes.
Okay.
So this system pissed me off before because it took a very simple system and they made it very complicated. And it seemed like it was not following rules that made sense, where people would end up with bounties where they had even CS and were O2 and stuff like that, mm-hmm. right? And we even have people taking screenshots from professional games where, you know, stuff is happening. And the calculations were all time-based.
Yeah.
Here they've made a change where dying while behind in farm delays how quickly you can accrue the bounty due to minion and monster gold, which is very big for me, because before, you have to take into another level of possibilities here when you're ganking for top lane, especially where, you know, previously, if someone is already getting bullied in lane, right, then there is a big wave that's built up. I almost always want to kill this person when a big wave is crashing, right? You want to dive them, they're going to lose out so much because they're also going to lose out on a lot of these minions. Previously, if you successfully killed that person and they were really far behind in farm, when they got back, they died, they had to use their teleport, they had to probably use their flash there as well. Then they farm up as much of the big wave that's at their turret as they can. They would get a bounty because they got a whole bunch of minions in a very short amount of time, and a lot of it was time gated. So I really, really like this change where they're trying to iron out some of those oddities with the system that they put in place, because it was definitely not perfect.
I think it is definitely a good change. I personally don't think it has a huge impact on like how most games go, because in that scenario, for example, it would probably have to be that plus the top laner TP's bot to like fight there, because it has to be like you still have to go like plus 40 or whatever CS in a time window, so like it's probably not big enough for just farming that one wave.
It seems ridiculous,
but I totally agree. It was one of the most
bounty in that situation.
It was one of the most frustrating situations because it felt super random. It's like, especially if you're in a counter matchup, I've had that where it's like you're playing a tank and you're getting slammed by a Jace and you get ganked and you die, and then the Jace goes and roams and he comes back to lane and I have like a 450 gold bounty on me and I'm 0-1 and I'm down farm and I'm like down two levels. I'm like,
see, like balance and everything, that is one
great
thing.
Feels change.
But fixing changes like this that just do not make sense, I think is really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, one thing that I've noticed about bounties is, what was the time thing you were talking about? Because I wasn't familiar with that rule.
The farm rule, so it's essentially like, the way that you got farm bounties is if you farmed a certain amount more than like the game average or the opposing team average within a time window. So like how this often happened in those weird scenarios is I get slammed top lane, I TP back to lane, everyone's fighting bot, so they're not farming. And then during this like 2-minute window or whatever the time limit was, I went like plus 40 CS on what the game average was because they were at Dragon or I was doing my other thing. That's how you got the farm bounties most of the time. It wasn't actually being I'm 40 CS over my lane opponent. So that's how it sometimes was pretty weird, where it's like in pro play, you saw it where mid lane doesn't have TP, the other guy TP's bot, he's farming mid, he gets a farm bounty.
Yeah, I've seen that for sure. I guess, I don't know, I haven't had as much issue with bounties as I guess the community has in general, because my understanding of it is the only way you get a bounty is if you have like a lot more gold than the average of the enemy team, right?
Yeah.
And so doesn't that kind of make sense that if the enemy team kills you, they should get a bigger reward because you had more money to work with?
Yeah.
That's kind of how I see it. But
general,
I guess they just
cleaned
it up a bit.
It's just one unique scenario where right. it's like yeah. your team can actually be losing. You can be down on levels and you have a bounty because your laner roamed while you were farming because you already died and you didn't have your team.
And like you said, it didn't even happen very much.
But it felt
it was
so bad.
Extremely rare. It doesn't affect the game that much. It's just really weird and like doesn't make yeah. sense at all. So should be fixed.
Yeah.
yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. Yep.
I think it could definitely use some cleaning up on
definitely.
The system.
Yeah.
But in general, I think I like it more than a lot of people do because
and also
I'm always broke in these games.
You
so
want those monkey bounties.
Also
I do.
A point that like Freak keeps on highlighting, the bounties didn't get increased like dramatically, right? They got increased a little bit and incrementally the higher the bounty is, mm-hmm. right? So like the first couple ones aren't that much different than they were before. One of the biggest impacts you're talking about, community reaction, is that they're plastered on the scoreboard now so people can see them. Like some people didn't really even know that they were happening or know that it was that big of a
yeah,
shutdown or something.
I think a lot of people
but
also
shows,
didn't realize that it's
it shows
the
total
kill gold.
Gold
yeah.
Taking into account the kill gold itself as well as the bounty. So that's why people are overreacting.
Yeah, I completely agree. Though on the previous system, it was possible that if you were on a losing team but you wanted a kill streak, you would still be worth a ton of gold when you die, right? With the old bounty system. Mm-hmm. Now, I do like how they have the system in place where if your team's losing, you won't
you're
have
trying to 1v9?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's good.
I like
all right.
it.
Still working on it.
Twitter questions. We got some Twitter questions here from your adoring fans, and maybe they also like us too. So one of the questions is, what do you think the impact of the new ADC items will have on junglers? Will there be more priority play on bot lane? Is it negligible? Like, do you have to slow down the ADCs now? Is there anything like that? You know, so are you going to be building these? Do you have to care more about what ADs are doing, you think?
I can only make a prediction because yeah. it's
you
haven't played
I haven't it.
Played too
this
much.
This is patch
but
day.
From what I've seen in my experience, when the crit AD carries are good, like the long-range marksman, you know, Caitlyn, Kog'Maw, Tristana, they almost always go hand in hand with enchanter supports, which are, you know, your Jannas, your Lulus,
and
that kind of
junglers.
Thing. Right. And it's not necessarily that you play a tank because they're better than the other junglers, but it's that if, say, I'm playing Camille and I'm against a Caitlyn who has a Lulu protecting her, I will never be able to kill her in a team fight.
Mm-hmm.
There's too much shielding, there's too much protection for the AD carry. And so I'm basically just cannon fodder for their AD carry. I'll die in 3 hits. So it kind of makes me think we'll go more toward like the Season 7 Ardent Censor sort of play style where with junglers losing access to like getting more XP, their ability to get ahead that way, I think that jungle will become more of a supportive role, something that, you know, can spike on mid game, get a nice vow for your AD carry. And, you know, I don't exactly know the numbers on how strong these kind of characters are going to be, but I think with what they're trying to do, it'll lead to a lot more of that thing, like the Iverns, the Nunu, Sejuani kind of thing. And then you'll have your hyper carries with your crit items.
Yeah, I completely agree. And because also, not only are junglers going to have less experience overall because of the jungle changes, but because there are also more neutral objectives and the neutral objectives are respawning faster, it really emphasized that type of game where it is a 5-on-5 fight, where you've got your DPS in the back line with your support peeling for them and stuff, and you have tanks in the front line. Whereas the counter used to be, you know, you also have to worry about split pushing. Split pushing seems to have lost a decent amount of power because of the importance of, you know, the dragons and Baron and forcing 5-on-5s like that.
How much age there has been in the game. It's so hard to pull off split push when there's like Sion and Ornn and Camille Galio and all this stuff.
And we haven't really seen like fully committed poke comps and like
C9.
You know, that actually reminded me of
I mean it, as an element, but it's not like the siege ones that we used to have.
Something I want to touch on real quick, mentioning the split push thing, is I actually think that a change they made in the preseason that it hasn't been highlighted a lot, but there were significant changes to how side lane minions act, where before macro was always like understanding how your side lanes were pushing, whether, mm-hmm. you know, there'd be like a big wave building toward you so you could like group and let that wave stack. And I don't know exactly how they did it, but minion waves will never push on the side lanes anymore. It takes a really long time. They'll almost always just meet and stay in that spot forever.
It's the team that's winning. Essentially, your minions start moving faster. So it does change where the breakpoints are as far as like how they will bounce back or how it'll put
yeah,
you.
But
your team has to have like an overall level
yeah.
lead.
If you're not overall ahead, it should work similarly to before. But I know
it doesn't though. Like in all my experience, minion waves will just sit there on the side wave for like 5+ minutes. Not pushing. So it actually, like, comps that do 1-3-1, that kind of thing, like, with soul laners that can continue split, are at a pretty big advantage because the fact that, like, you have to go to your sideways if you want to get farm. Like, you can't really just pull in mm-hmm. slow push waves anymore in the game. I don't know if it's an intended change, but that's how they've been working. And mm-hmm. so yeah, I think it's one of, like, the biggest changes mm-hmm. to macro that I've seen in, like, the past few years is that, like, small change that's actually, like, had a pretty big impact on how the game's played.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. I also think it's something that, like, it's just not fully understood yet because everyone has had it so worked out in your head how waves behave in the past. So everyone, I think, has to relearn it. And also because it's dynamic based on level leads and all this stuff, it will take a long time, I think, for everyone to understand, okay, we're 2 levels up on average than them. This is how the minion waves behave now. And that's something probably that coaches and
analysts... 2 levels on average is also insane.
I'm just giving a random example.
Team.
But, yeah. you know, that's something that coaches and analysts and stuff would probably have to really figure out and start to teach teams. And probably the first person to do it will give their team probably a significant advantage, I would think. We do have one more question here.
We have 2 more questions.
We're gonna go with 1 more question. You want to hit both? The other one was one that we basically talked about.
We already answered Lucas Boyer basically because yep. we talked
That's
about.
That's why I was going to 1 more question, Kobe.
I'm just saying we got 3.
All right, we got 1 more question here from Kevin at FaZeCast. He says, "What do you think about Riot forking the game at certain major milestones like preseason, midseason, etc.? Kind of just the idea of you know creating these big changes at certain points throughout the year."
Personally, I don't think that could ever work. Hasn't worked for crypto, any of those forking for any of the coins that hey, you guys are both blank stares on crypto. Okay, never mind.
I was talking about Leap.
Azale never got into it. But the first thing that comes to mind, you're just going to split the player base if you fork the game and you have different versions.
Is that what it is? I think they mean just like going a different.
I interpret
the question as like making big changes, going different ways, kind of thing. But maybe
you
I'm
fork it at different milestones, like preseason.
Yeah, like preseason and midseason and stuff. It's how I'm interpreting.
I understood it as like breaking up the game, like because they're in the ranked season. There's the splits.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah, and then he says, and it could let you play your favorite version of the game. So then if there's 2 versions and I want to play old season and you play new season.
Oh, so he does mean splitting the player base.
Then you're
misunderstood.
I don't like that at all.
No,
I think
like
anything
that
splits a player base is not good for the game. I love it when there's like the most players you can have that are having the same experience.
Yeah, it hurts Q-times.
What did you think forking was?
Oh, I thought he literally meant since he was talking about preseasons, literally just like creating big changes at that point, you know, like. But I misunderstood.
That's why you guys also don't get the crypto thing.
Yeah.
Dude, you'd have people that are like, I want to go back to like
season
4, you know, like no one could beat me in season 4 and everyone else is just like.
He's the only player playing.
That was 5 years ago, dude. Who are you competing against?
Yeah. I also just think that in general with like people remember a lot of stuff through kind of like the rose tinted glasses, right? Same thing happened. I mean, this guy references Vanilla WoW and whatever. A lot of people, I think, forget about issues they had with the game at different times and they just remember like what was most fun for them at that time. They're like, oh, I loved when, you know, AP Gragas was so fun or whatever, right? They have their favorite thing and they forget about all the another annoying things, you know, that happened at the same time. Because that's true of every game. There's always frustrations. There's always, you know, some sort of imbalances, no peace stuff.
Yeah. But you can't really do that where you would split the player base in half.
Nah, I don't think that'd be good.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely agree. All right, well, I think that's going to do it for this episode of The Dive. I'd like to give a shout out to Alienware for our beautiful new laptops. If you guys noticed, no Riot Fist. These are looking very, very nice. So thank you to them. They're also doing all the computers on the LCS stage. I want to thank you, Medios, for coming in and hanging out with us, dropping some jungle knowledge on us. And
thank you for having me.
Hopefully, we will see you on the LCS stage sometime soon. I wish you all the best of luck in your games. Remember, we LCS is going to be starting at 2 p.m. PST this Saturday. And then we also are going to have games on Sunday, of course. Keep tweeting us your questions. Hashtag the dive LOL. You can tweet at Riot Kobe, at Riot Azale. Let us know what you want to find out. Also, suggestions for guests. If you would like anyone to come in, hit us up.
You can apply. The process is rigorous. Medios went through a complete screening. He can contest. And he was actually the only one approved so far.
Maybe we'll just have Medios
keep the list
every week.
Open.